Tonight's topic is the book of Ecclesiastes, found in the Old Testament. If you look it up online, you'll find a lot of commentaries about it. Quite a number of them wonder what it's doing in the Bible in the first place. It doesn't seem to fit in with anything else in there. Christian writers have called it flippant, and non-Christian writers have called it nihilistic, as in believing in nothing. So it's been called everything from flippant to nihilistic, and it's also been called very pessimistic. It's regarded as the most pessimistic book by far in the Bible. And unless you get a very good translation of the Bible, and I'd recommend this one, it's called the New English Bible. It's put together by people from various denominations under the auspices of Oxford University. So it's all the translations are very true to the original. But in some editions of the Bible, the word God has been inserted quite a few more times than it appears in the original. This is to tone it down, I guess. So if you read the version in the Bible I just showed you, it's the number of times that word occurs is the actual number of times it occurs in the original manuscript. And there's also been a happy ending written to the book of Ecclesiastes, which occurs in some Bibles. And the same thing happened to the book of Job. Some Bibles have a happy ending to the book of Job. There's no happy ending in the book of Ecclesiastes, and there's no happy ending in the book of Job. But Ecclesiastes outdoes Job in pointing out our utter ignorance of the ways of quote-unquote God. The word God is used in Ecclesiastes, but it's not defined. And it's written at a time before God was thought of as a person with a gender who's watching everybody and so forth. When this book was written, that idea of God had not yet emerged. It came later, about the 3rd century A.D. So when the word God here is used, it's used in a manner that defies definition. But nonetheless, it's used. The word is used. One of the more interesting things, if you read or have read or read again the book of Ecclesiastes, especially if you have a familiarity with different traditions, spiritual and philosophical, one of the amazing things about this book is that it kind of embraces every point of view you could think of. You can read it, you know, it's all-encompassing. And it's said to be written by Solomon, who is considered to be wise. So we're going to try to talk about it tonight in a way that shows that there might be something more to it than flippancy on the one hand, or a nihilism on the other hand, or pessimism on the other hand. Now, if I want the world to be exactly the way I want the world to be, and if I want to live in a world where things are permanent and aren't going to change, and if I want to live in a world where I'm not going to get old and die, then I'm going to think Ecclesiastes is pretty pessimistic. Because it says we live in a world where things will change, and we live in a world where things do age and die. We live in a world where people come and go, and someone who is famous in his own time the name won't even be known in future times. And that includes kings and princes as well as fools. Most editions of the Bible, as you probably have heard the phrase, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. The translation that's more accurate, which is in this Bible, is, and I'll just read the first paragraph of Ecclesiastes. It's all in the words of the speaker. The words of the speaker, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Emptiness, emptiness, says the speaker. Emptiness. All is empty. What does man gain from all his labor and his toil here under the sun? Generations come and generations go while the earth endures forever. And if you look at the book, read the book of Ecclesiastes, you'll discover him. He says, I've followed, I've looked at all, everything under the sun, the speaker says. I've looked at all of it. And then he gives examples of what he's looked at. He's looked at people working very, very hard and laboriously and without a lot of happiness involved at obtaining earthly goods. And he's watched them do this. And he's noticed that they're no happier when they've accomplished their goals than they were before they set out. And he says, all is emptiness. He says, he's examined those. He himself has experienced all these things, he says. He's gotten everything that's supposed to make one happy. Wealth, palaces, beautiful women, gardens. And he's not happy. They didn't make him happy. They just made him covetous. So then he dipped into pleasures, he says. All the pleasures. And he experienced them all. And they all came to nothing. They all passed. At best, they were pleasant memories. At worst, they were too late recognized mistakes. His overriding concern, not really concern, his overriding awareness, and this is why some people call it pessimistic, his overriding awareness is the fact of death. He comes back to it again and again and again until you want to slam the book shut. Why do you keep talking about death? Well, the reason he keeps talking about it is because that's where we're all headed. In the last section of the book of Ecclesiastes, it has a separate little title to it, which is called Advice to a Young Man. And the main advice given is become aware that you're mortal as early as you can. Don't pretend you're not. Don't try to hide from it. You're going to die. And you don't know when. He's just stating facts. Some people call this pessimism. He would call it realism. There's no way around it. We're all mortal. At least these bodies are. And everything we achieve will be left behind. And probably fall into the hands of those who didn't work for it themselves. This is what he says. So you work and you toil and you get all this accomplishment and you die. And it goes in the hands of ne'er-do-wells.